Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
USC great and NFL stud, Frosty Rucker.
The Trojans back in front.
And LAFB founder Ryan Zyrud on the Believe Podcast Network and LAFBnetwork.com. This is your destination for Los Angeles football.
What's going on, Los Angeles? What's up, LAFB fam? Welcome into the LA Football Show here on the LA Football Network, always on the Believe Podcast Network. Coming at you live on a rainy Wednesday here in Los Angeles, but thanks for tuning in. Sorry we're kicking off a little late here. Full disclosure, I always like to be transparent and honest. This is we're humans, we're people, so I like to let everyone know kind of what's going on in my life and not spend too much time of it. Don't worry, we'll get into some Rams, Chargers, and Bruins talk here, but a minute before I was about to go live, we were all set up, show was prepped, and I get a call from my dad that my Nana had a massive heart attack and is pretty much no longer with us. It's a crazy, crazy couple years for a lot of people, and I know there's been a ton of heartache and loss and, you know, sadness for a lot of people around the world in these last years. So nothing new, but this was a bit of a shock for our family. My Nana is dealing with dementia, so hasn't been 100% healthy for quite some time, but, you know, this wasn't a expected heart attack by any means or this to happen this soon. So, and that comes on the heels of yesterday, my lovely wife losing her grandmother, who passed away. So a wild 24 hours for the Dyrud family. I still wanted to come on here and do this. Just for me, it's a release. I'd rather be on here talking football than, you know, sitting and overthinking about things. So, you know, you look at the positives, the great life that they both lived and the great memories and stuff that we'll always have and cherish and that. And, you know, if I can just say anything to anyone, it's, you know, count your blessings, you know, keep your loved ones close, tell people how much you love them all the time. I thank God right now that I spoke to my grandma on Christmas, hadn't talked to her in a few months. And I'm very, very grateful that we spoke on Christmas, had a great conversation, had some laughs. That's something I'll cherish, and I'll remember that conversation for a long time. So, this will probably be a short show, but like I said, for me, I know maybe some people listening might think, what the hell are you doing, you know, talking about football right now? But for me, it's an escape, it's a release, and it it just, it helps me, I think, to not have to really go there yet, because it was so unexpected, literally at 4:59 when I found out, and here we are 5:30. So, yeah, bear with me. We'll get through it, but, I've got a good show planned for you. We're talking, you know, Chargers brutal loss to the Texans, and we're going to look at what needs to happen for them to make the playoffs still. It still is a possibility, Charger fans. Rams, sloppy game, but still a win over the Vikings, a playoff contending team in the Vikings. I know people don't like to think that, but they are a team fighting for their playoff lives, and the Rams took care of business. So we'll get into that and kind of what they look like as a Super Bowl contender. And then for UCLA, last night, supposed to be a Holiday Bowl game. I was on my way to that game, kind of more crushing blows, driving. I'll get into it, but basically I was driving from Colorado, leaving my family's house, left early to drive to San Diego for this game, drove through a blizzard in Arizona, crazy, lots of driving with a one-year-old in the car, my wife, and we're, you know, 4 hours away and find out the game's canceled. So, but I'm going to be joined by Jamal Madney, our guy here at the LAFB Network, to talk about why that happened and what it means for the UCLA program. So we'll get into that at the bottom of the show. Jerry, thank you so much. Appreciate the condolences. And yeah, tough way to end the year, but hey, we'll look at the positives as we always do. I got a hot toddy here. Wife and daughter are healthy. So, you know, we'll carry on. Carry on. Show today brought to you by our friends at TickPick. If you're thinking of going to the game this weekend, actually, I'm planning on being at the Chargers-Broncos game this weekend, my wife and I, seeing when, who knows, when these funerals and stuff will now be happening. But if you need tickets still, tickpick.com/LAFB, no fees for any tickets that you buy there. The price you see is the price you get. So you ditch going to StubHub, ditch going to Ticketmaster, all that stuff, and go to tickpick.com/LAFB. There is a link in the description below if you're having trouble finding it. So you can, yeah, easy to get it there. You guys see the Charger game, or we'll see you at the Rams game, you know, next weekend when they close out the season against the 49ers. So make sure to get tickets. tickpick.com/LAFB. Let's start with this Rams team. Let's start with the positives. Start with the positives here. So the Rams are now basically control their destiny, at least when it comes to winning the division, in a sense. So they still need some losses to happen by, you know, the Packers and the Cowboys if they want to shoot up to that 2 or 1 seed, which we'll get into. But they pretty much, I think, control their own destiny here to win the division now, the NFC West, as they sit right now as the 3 seed in the NFC. Let's just look into that, and then we'll talk about the game a little bit. So I'm going to pull up here a graphic for you. I feel like that might be, you know, if you're watching here on the LAFB Network YouTube, it's sometimes a little easier to just be able to visualize what we're talking about here. So here is the current playoff picture here for your Los Angeles Rams, as they are the 3 seed. And if the playoffs started today, they would face our hated rivals, the San Francisco 49ers. So, you know, I don't think that's an ideal matchup, just seeing how it's been the last few years, seeing the McVay versus Shanahan curse. But hey, it's a game you want to win. It would be a great playoff game. And what's nice about it is you get to see, and again, this can all change exponentially before the end of the year with 2 games left to play, but you get to see this team in week 18, to end the season. So, you know, if the Rams play the Niners well or not well, you know, you get a shot at redemption here if this were to play out like this. Now, I think Green Bay will probably end up with the 1 seed, seeing how their schedule rides out. You know, things can happen, obviously, but I think the 2 seed is the definite possibility, considering the Cowboys and the Cardinals actually do play this weekend, which is obviously a big, big matchup for this Rams team. And it's hard because it's like you don't want to see the Cardinals even still have a shot at the division. You'd rather just see them lose and, you know, be finished. They already clinched the playoff spot, but, you know, basically clinched the division for the Rams. But in the, you know, likelihood of them moving up to the 2 seed, you're actually rooting for the Cardinals here to beat the Cowboys so that the Rams can overtake them, because I'll be honest with you, I like a matchup. Again, this can all change, but as of right now, I like a matchup with the Eagles a lot better than I do the Niners. Now, that being said, the Niners are looking like Jimmy Garoppolo's going to be out for the foreseeable future with a thumb injury. You know, I believe it's a chipped bone and a fracture, or a fracture and a tendon tear in the throwing thumb there. So he could miss some significant time. And so you'll see Trey Lance, which it's so much unknown with Trey Lance. We know what the potential is there. We know the talent he has coming out of North Dakota State, being the third overall draft pick. But if, again, we saw this with the Chargers last year, continually saying they wanted to, Tyrod was the starter when healthy until after five games. It was like, okay, they cannot take Justin Herbert out anymore. The Niners and Kyle Shanahan continue to put their faith in Jimmy Garoppolo, telling you one of two things. One, they're doing like that overcoach thing where Trey Lance should be the starter, is ready, but they're just kind of trusting the veteran more with their playoff hopes. Or that Trey Lance really is not ready. And he is a rookie quarterback that had a year off, that played, you know, FBS football before that, didn't play a single snap in 2020 due to COVID and the shutdown, and prepared for the NFL draft, and now is just not ready yet to start at quarterback in the NFL. Not saying he won't be eventually, but just not right now. So that's what, we just don't know what he's going to bring to this Niners team. And so it's very difficult to kind of project which Niners team we'll see, and which Niners team will be a better matchup for this Rams team, or if they'd rather face another team. Because the first time they played obviously did not go well. We all know how that game ended, and it wasn't a good one. So, you know, that's something that we'll have to monitor and kind of see how they play this week, as we assume it will be Trey Lance, or not even assume, we know it will be Trey Lance with Jimmy Garoppolo out for sure this game. So we'll kind of get a little taste of what that could look like in that Week 18 matchup, and then if it were to be the playoff matchup in the first round of the playoffs. A lot of interesting things. But yeah, I think we're rooting for that 2 seed. Obviously, the 1 seed is still obtainable, technically, if the Packers were to lose out and the Rams were to win out. I just don't think that's very likely. So, yeah, but let's talk about a little about this game against the Vikings. You know, I know there were... It was an interesting kind of... What's the word I'm looking for? Transition, or an interesting juxtaposition among the fan base. What up, pay your time? Say it right this time, right? How we doing, man? Hope you're doing well. Thanks for tuning in. You know, you saw throughout the game, and again, I'm going by kind of Twitter, because that's kind of how we judge the fan base a little bit, because that's in real time, people talking and communicating, and I love it. It's great. But we see, you know, series by series reactions. And when the Rams and Matthew Stafford particularly hit their, I guess you could say, valley of the game with his third interception, it was a instant, like, dramatic disgust with this team, with the organization, with Sean McVay as a coach, and obviously with Matthew Stafford. Now, Matthew Stafford had probably his worst game, not only as a Ram, probably paralleling what he did even with the Lions. I mean, he finished this game with only 197 yards and 3 picks. Did have a touchdown at the end to OBJ, which sealed it, which was great. Good to rebound. But just an abysmal game. And even the throws that weren't intercepted, I mean, he was just off. Just one of those games that was just off. Missing open receivers. I mean, there were a few plays where critical moments in the game had guys open and just missed through it. Not even a mental error. Like, just did not throw it well. It was just a bad game. And I know there are many don't want to call them haters. I don't think anyone's a hater yet, because obviously you're rooting for this team, but there's definitely a contingency out there that are kind of expecting Matthew Stafford to fail. Not hoping he does, but expecting it. And this was one of those games where he did. And so they're coming out very quickly and saying, here's the quarterback that we mortgaged the future for, that we're not even going to win a playoff game with. Now, I look at this game and I say, and I'll get to this question in a second, payout time. It looks like a fun one. But I look at this and I say, okay, your quarterback, regardless of who it is, what you gave up for, but the guy playing under center threw three picks, had maybe the worst game of his career, or one of them. You were still in control the entire game, and you won the game on the road against a playoff contending team. This wasn't the Jacksonville Jaguars at home. This wasn't the Detroit Lions at home. This was a 7-7 Minnesota Vikings team who's won some good games in this league, has lost a lot of really close games in this league this year, and were fighting for their playoff lives on the road in a hostile environment at US Bank Stadium, and you still controlled the game from kickoff to when the clock hit zeros, won by a touchdown, and your quarterback threw three picks and played pretty awful. That to me is exciting, because I know the detractors and the people upset with whatever's going on will say, well, yeah, but we're not going to win a playoff game playing like this. I mean, yeah, you're probably right. But if you remember correctly, Tom Brady had three interceptions in the NFC Championship game. Just so happened that Drew Brees did too. And the Tampa Bay Bucks just capitalized on their interceptions and they won and went on to the Super Bowl. I'm not saying the Rams are going to win if Matthew Stafford's throwing three picks in a playoff game. But every game, every week, every opponent is different. And you have to look at the totality of what this team did. Special teams finally getting on track a little bit. A punt return for a touchdown. When was the last time we had that happen? The defense, honestly, if there are still people out there, excuse my French, bitching about Raheem Morris, you need to, like, watch some other teams play football. Because this Rams defense is playing very, very good. And let's give some credit to Raheem Morris and what he's done. And let's obviously give credit to the players and Jalen Ramsey, Aaron Donald, Von Miller coming to his own now. Leonard Floyd, who's been a staple this whole year, doesn't get a ton of credit. Greg Gaines, who's getting a cast on this week and still is going to play on Sunday. The defense is playing great, and we're, even when given short fields, still stepped up in pivotal moments and held the Vikings to 3 points. Which obviously, when the Rams went by 7, that's huge. So playing complimentary football, and you have to think, and again, I'm an optimist, so the others will probably take the other path down this, but you have to think Matthew Stafford's going to play better down the stretch than he played last Sunday. I believe he will. He's too talented, too good, too smart to play like he did on Sunday. But at least we know that the team didn't implode when he did. And the special teams and the defense played great, but also you look at some of the offensive players. Cooper Kupp, obviously, MVP. Sony Michel, what a amazing asset that now Sony Michel is to this team. Has put a stranglehold on the starting role. Daryl Henderson's going on IR again, unfortunately. Like, I never say anything bad about players, but guy can't stay healthy. Had like one run and ended up, you know, tweaking his knee. And now he's, you know, out again. And that's just why he can never be the starting bell cow back, unfortunately. That's just why. Just guy can't stay healthy. Can't really break tackles, can't stay healthy. Sonny Michel has been, he's the number one rusher in the NFL over the last 3 weeks. Ahead of Jonathan Taylor is Sonny Michel. With like 423 yards or something like that. It's playing great. And you're getting Cam Akers back, who was activated. He wasn't active. He was a scratch during the game, but he was activated the 53-man roster. It's exciting for this playoff team, and it's going to take pressure off Matthew Stafford so he can get right, and he'll play a hell of a lot better come playoff time. And hopefully we have that two seed, kind of like what I was talking about, and don't have to face the Niners again or whoever is going to be in that six seed spot if we stay in the three seed. But that's what we're going to get into a lot leading up to the following week. We got Baltimore this week, which we'll preview the game on Friday, so we'll get into that one. Big, big matchup. Lamar Jackson's probably back on the road. So that'll be a big matchup after they got blown out a few years ago playing against them. I want to answer this question. I haven't even read the whole thing, but let's see it before we get Jamal in here to talk a little Holiday Bowl, and then we'll wrap the show up with the Chargers and their playoff chances. All right, question. If you had to pick three players, the Rams, to help you survive Jurassic Park, who would you pick to help you get across the island and escape on the boat in 4 hours? Three players. It's a great question. It's a lot of fun. Obviously, Aaron Donald. I mean, that's a given, right? Based on strength, based on soul, passion, power. Like, I feel like he could just beat up, like, he would just protect me from the dinosaurs. But if, you know, if we had to get across a river and he had to, like, carry me, that's my guy. So Aaron Donald, no question. Cooper Kupp, I'd probably have, because we got to have someone smart, right? Tactical. Not saying Aaron Donald's not, but you have to have a leader that's going to be your tactician. Okay, where are we going? You know, how are we reading different parts of the island? How are we, you know, we're seeing, you know, the dinosaurs over on this side of the island or to our right here. How do we escape over here? We got to get over, you know, build a bridge of some kind or use a rope swing or some kind of architecture or engineering to get us across this ravine. Cooper Kupp, I feel like, is my guy to do that. Dude's just super smart, a cerebral player, obviously talented too. But the dude just, he has something a lot of receivers don't have. And that's just the crazy intellectual side of the game. Third player. So we got Aaron Donald. We got Cooper Kupp. Who do I want on third? I feel like maybe Johnny Hecker. We need some comic relief here. If you're going through a tumultuous time running away from these dinosaurs on Jurassic Park Island, you got Aaron Donald, who's your brawn. You got Cooper Kupp, who's your brains. I need someone that just keeps me sane and keeps me, okay, positive, right? Johnny Hecker's my guy for that. Johnny Hecker kind of runs the special teams and also runs the, you know, he has a great social media following and does a lot. So, Payo time, that's the answer to your question there. Those are my three guys. Johnny Hecker, Cooper Kupp, Aaron Donald. But this Rams team is in good shape heading into this matchup with the Baltimore Ravens. You know, they had an integral win over the Vikings. I know it wasn't pretty, but they got the job done. And I like to think they're going to do, you know, Matthew Stafford can play a lot better down the stretch and heading into the playoffs. And we'll see if we can bump up to that two or that one seed. But now joining me on the show, my guy Jamal, we're going to talk a little bit about this Holiday Bowl, the end of the year for UCLA, what's to come. But my man, what's going on, bro? Thanks for joining the show. How you doing?
Good to see you, man. Great to see you. Thanks for having me.
Of course. How was Christmas? How was the holiday? How's everything going on with the fam?
No, all well. You know, it's always a great time to see the family and, you know, just happy holidays to all our readers and viewers out there, and hope everyone had a great holiday season and stays and joyous.
Yeah, well, I'm happy to hear that. I'm bummed we are not in, or I guess we would have been back by now, but yesterday we were both supposed to be in San Diego for the Holiday Bowl game. We had planned to both be down there, do a show down there, and obviously circumstances did not allow that. So, you know, the Holiday Bowl officially canceled today. UCLA pulled out yesterday. First, let me just get your thoughts on the news. I mean, I don't even know how to, like, pose the question. Obviously, it came 5 hours before kickoff? So what was going through your mind when you heard the news?
it was shock, Ryan, because, you know, we were kind of gearing up to go there. And I know you and I were talking about plans and, you know, how to meet up and all those things. And so, you know, you sort of walk in, you're ready, you're excited. It's game day. Went down there to San Diego, saw some friends, and was really, this was kind of the pinnacle of that trip to go watch that game and see UCLA in a bowl game for the first time in about 5 or 6 years. I was really excited about it. And then it just felt like the air went out of, you know, my lungs when I saw that news. But there was something kind of deep down where I was like, God, I just hope we get to kick off and we just sort of play this game, just the way kind of things were shaking out in college basketball and with some of the other bowl games, and kind of my worst nightmare came to life.
Yeah, you know, it was, I remember, we drove from Colorado to try to get out to San Diego. We went the a different route to try to avoid snow. Ended up still hitting snow. Delayed us by like 3 hours driving through like blizzard-like conditions in the Arizona mountains on this little two-lane highway. Like we got off the main highway to avoid Flagstaff. We're like, oh, we'll avoid the big city Flagstaff where they get a lot of snow. And we ended up cutting through these other part of the mountains thinking we'd avoid the snow. No, absolutely not. Just happened to be now on windy two-lane road. So it was actually more treacherous. Anyway, get to Phoenix. Kind of deciding, I was texting you like, you know, we'll decide in the morning if we can make it out there. And we were kind of deciding, you know, maybe we just end up driving home and then get the news the game's canceled. So all that. And it was, you know, I just feel so bad for, you know, the players on both sides, not just UCLA, but NC State and the fans that flew out. I know a lot of fans had bought tickets and staying out in San Diego where it traveled long and far. So let me ask you this. Unprecedented time, so it's kind of an unfair question to you, but is the NCAA and the bowl systems handling this? Like, should they just be canceling these games, or is there a different way they could go about doing it? Because you think of all the factors, not just the players and coaches, but like I said, the fans that spend a lot of money to get out to these things around the holidays, and then just 5 hours before kickoff, cancellation. Do you think there's a way they could do it differently, or is this kind of the world we live in now?
Yeah, Ryan, it's really an unprecedented situation, obviously, with COVID. Having said that, I think that there are some things the NCAA can maybe look at. And one of those things is, in terms of kind of the social protocols with the teams, trying to figure out a way where position guys don't really room or interact with one another. And I think a lot of these cancellations are due to teams having not enough players at one particular position group or two particular position groups. So can you kind of spread them out, you know, in terms of kind of not just social distancing, but even in terms of team activities, you know, can you have them kind of in the film room and in practice together? But then once you sort of leave the practice walls, try and sort of protect almost the way you sort of protect the president and the vice president. So you don't want to have too many folks in the cabinet on one plane, for instance. You know, are there some things that you can do from a position standpoint there? And then I think that the threshold needs to be a little bit higher. And I think every 4 or 5 days, I think reporting leading up to a game of, you know, how close are you to sort of certain areas in terms of certain position groups and trying to figure that out.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's, you know, it's one of those things that's, it's so unprecedented. But yeah, there has to be talks about this all off season and all season long, knowing that this could be happening. And it's just crazy to see all these cancellations and whatnot. We were talking a little bit in the group chat when this came down. And you, I'm not saying I disagree with you at all, but you had an opinion on kind of things that could be done and where the actual blame could be assessed to. So I'll throw it to you and let you kind of talk through that and kind of what Martin Jarman maybe could have done differently to avoid these things from happening.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Ryan, you never want to sort of be in a position of blame, you know, with situations as difficult as this. But, you know, there's a little bit of a concerning pattern of behavior right now that's taking place with UCLA Athletics last month. When you look at the basketball team having to cancel 3 or 4 games and then having to postpone the first 2 games of conference, and now you look at the Holiday Bowl where it was UCLA that had to pull out 5 hours before. This falls squarely on the AD. I mean, the AD has very very jobs in his or her job description, and one of those jobs is make sure your teams play on the field. And I think that for as much as I personally love Martin Jarman and think he's absolutely the right guy for the UCLA job, one of the most progressive ADs in the country, he's a man of the people, his social media game is on point, it's on fire, and he's just an individual that brings an energy and a connectivity of a fan base. And I think UCLA is going to reap those benefits in years to come. You know, this one falls on him, as much as I hate to say it. And I think sometimes that perhaps his social media activity maybe sometimes inadvertently sends the wrong message to his players, that because the AD is so social and he's so sort of out there and handshaking, talking to so many different people, that maybe it's okay for the players to do it, because there is a concerning pattern of behavior here. NC State flew all the way across the country and was ready to play. UCLA had to drive 2 hours and wasn't ready to play. And so, you know, the bottom line there is that it's really unfortunate, but as a Bruin fan, as a Bruin writer, you know, the criticism of UCLA right now from the NC State fan base, I think is fair.
Yeah, yeah. So for the sake of being devil's advocate and to debate, because I don't disagree with you, I think those are all valid points, and I think the buck does stop with, you know, the AD, obviously. That's his position. But for the sake of devil's advocate, I want to throw something out to you and get your opinion on it. So we're in a culture now, and not just now, but for always, where it's always, especially in sports, we'll keep it to sports, but we always need to find someone to put the blame on, right? Sometimes it's like someone has to be blamed for something going wrong. Usually it's the head coach. In this instance, I agree with you. Yeah, it could be the AD. But I think in some circumstances, specifically this one, sometimes it's just really bad luck, and there's really nothing that can truly be done about what happened. And I look at, and here's why I get to that point. Again, I'm playing devil's advocate here. NC State travels across the country. They go, so I get the media updates. They did a media day at the San Diego Zoo on Christmas Eve. They did a media day at SeaWorld on Christmas Day. They were there for a longer period of time. Like you said, UCLA drove down. They ended up delaying their drive down, drove down later. They didn't do the zoo. They did still do the SeaWorld day, to my knowledge. But, you know, less interaction out in the public. They were supposedly home more with families, which obviously this thing can spread around as well. They are all vaccinated, so they followed protocols and doing that, whatnot, and in following what NCAA guidelines and CDC guidelines and stuff of that nature. So when you look at it like that, it's like, okay, well, they were doing less stuff, interacting. They took less time to go down to San Diego. They followed everything preseason, what they were supposed to do. And what we've learned in these last 3 weeks is this thing just spreads damn fast, and sometimes you just get unlucky. So when you look at it like that, from a devil's advocate point of view, how much can you maybe chalk up to, well, it's just bad luck, or like what you were saying, is there just more that the AD should and could have done to prevent this from happening, similar to how maybe North Carolina did?
No, Ryan, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, there's definitely a serious element of bad luck here. There's no question about it, and I completely agree with you. We're in this society where everyone's got to blame, you know, everyone sort of is pointing the finger at someone to sort of provide closure to some sort of circumstance and provide some sort of explanation. And I totally agree with you. Those are all very valid points. I just kind of go back to a couple of things here. You know, the basketball team was kind of going through a similar situation. Now we got the football team. Especially when, you know, when you're talking about a college football playoff right now, I have a hard time believing Alabama's not going to play that game or Michigan's not going to play that game. And especially when you're trying to invoke a culture of serious, you know, UCLA football has kind of been you know, the kind of the younger brother in LA for the decade. And when you're trying to invoke a culture of legitimacy, that we're very serious in the program and we want fans to come and travel and watch us and be serious in that regard, you have to sort of take this a little bit more as a business trip. And I think that there is some tighter controls that could be in place because at the end of the day, you know, there's not every school has had to kind of cancel games in the last month. And when it's your school and it's multiple sports, you sort of have to double click and say, well, obviously we're in Los Angeles, we're in Southern California. There's sort of a hotbed of Omicron spreading activity there. So the rules that apply to the rest of the country shouldn't really apply to us. And we have to kind of take it to the next level if we want to do that. And I think that's point number one, to sort of acknowledge that your circumstance is different. And that's leadership. And I think number two, I think where fans and individuals are really upset here is just the communication of this. The fact that this happened 5 hours before kickoff, you know, to think that 12 hours or 18 hours that UCLA was completely ready to play, and then 5 hours all of a sudden with the drop of a hat they're not, that's a little fishy. And that doesn't pass the eye test just from a scientific, pragmatic standpoint. You know, it takes 18 hours to 24 hours for this thing to spread. And so you got to be thinking that you're probably in some yellow, orange region a day, 24 hours before, 36 hours before, and to say, hey, we're ready to go. And then 5 hours before kickoff at a booster brunch, you know, for Jarman to kind of get up there and say, oh, by the way, we're not playing the game. It's just not a good look. It's not a good leadership look.
Yeah, and I think that's I think the key point there is. So for those that don't know, and I know you know this, but for those listening that don't know, UCLA was having COVID issues leading up to this game. It wasn't like the national media is reporting it, but those of us that follow the team, there had been stuff coming out that teams, you know, Quantrez Knight, other players were basically saying, oh, I tested positive. I can't play in this game. Thank you, UCLA, for everything. And some people may have read that as, oh, they're just going to skip the bowl game. But no, any player that came out in the last week saying they weren't playing was due to COVID and testing positive. So the night before the game, they were down to two interior defensive linemen and had a linebacker that actually was going to be playing defensive line for depth. So they were already thin, but as of that night, they were good to go. So that's where, to your point, they should have said, okay, everyone is in their own room. You're not going out. You're not, I mean, maybe they did. I don't know. Maybe they just got unlucky, like I was saying earlier. But at that point, when you're down to that thin, but you're ready to go, and then sleep over the night, and the next day when you do your testing before, you know, ready to rock and roll, then you have more players test positive, and that's when they had to pull the plug, because then more players tested, and then they were just couldn't field the team. So that's, I think, to your point, where I agree, where, you know, what happened the night before that, I mean, we probably will never know. And if again, was it just bad luck and there was stuff just sitting around and that's when it happened? Or was it guys still hanging out doing team activities, which is nothing, you know, nothing illegal, nothing bad, but just when you have this game on the line that you want to see happen, you probably couldn't have it. So it's unfortunate, man. It sucks too, because, you know, LA, I know this game was in San Diego, but California in general has the strictest rules with COVID. So it's not like they're playing in Texas or some other state that has a lot of less restrictions. They're in a really restricted state. It just unfortunate. You know, I feel for these players, feel for these coaches, feel for the fans. But what's next now for UCLA, Jamal? Because, I mean, season's over now. It's done. We were kind of hoping for that exclamation point at the end of the year. A good year, as us at the LA Football Network have said, you know, I think a solid season that this team can build upon and do things. We were hoping a bowl win would then send them for a 5-game win streak heading into next year, where they play a pretty light non-conference schedule where they could build more and stack more wins. But you don't get that bowl game. So how do you still keep a positive light on this season heading into next year?
Well, I think it's a very positive light, Ryan. 8-4, you end up 6-3 in conference play. I mean, these are records that UCLA has not achieved in the last six or seven years. And, you know, this is only their eight plus win season in the last 23 years. So there's a lot to be excited about, not to mention demolishing of the crosstown rival USC at the end of the season. So there's, I think, a lot of momentum. I think moving forward, this is that building block season, that year three building block season that everyone was looking for Chip to sort of be that next stepping stone. And when you look at kind of some key dates here coming up, January 16th is when, you know, Chip's contract officially sort of runs into year five and that buyout goes away. And so I know that, you know, the athletic department and Chip are kind of negotiating the contract. I believe that he's certainly going to come back there and that'll be official. And then the next couple of weeks is going to be a determination of, you know, who's staying and who's leaving. Obviously, we know we got two defensive players that have already declared. We've got a bunch of super seniors. But I think the big question on everyone's mind is, what happens to DTR? What happens to Phillips? What happens to Dulcich? And then, you know, based on that, there's going to be sort of a reloading that takes place. But I'm very excited with Dylan Gabriel, Ethan Garber's potential quarterback battle in the spring. I think you have a very light non-conference with Bowling Green as well as two HBCUs, and that should be a 3-0 start. And that brings you to six consecutive wins, basically. And so for the guys that are here to start 3-0 and go into conference play with that winning culture and those winning habits, this is a big year for UCLA. And in many ways, you know, the last year of opportunity before we kind of see kind of what happens across town. I think it's going to take Lincoln Riley a year to kind of get things going. And I think UCLA has a legit shot to not only win the Pac-12 South, but win the conference outright, and then kind of set their own trajectory to sort of go match USC blow by blow in 2023 and beyond. So lots to be excited about, but we'll all be sort of anxiously watching to see what happens with, you know, the key performers like DTR, Phillips, and Dulcich.
We talked about it when the Lincoln Riley hire happened, how we think it was good for UCLA. Like, it was a bummer because they missed their window of UCLA or USC mediocrity to really supplant them. But it was good because it's going to force them to really go into this arms race. And Jamal, how great will it be? I think I texted you this actually when the game was happening. We were watching when the Ohio State Michigan game was, and they were both top 10 ranked teams, snowing, like the crowd was into it. Michigan wins for the first time in Jim Harbaugh's tenure, and you just see the elation at the Big House. Like, how great would it be if for the next decade, if USC and UCLA football could have that kind of energy where they're both top 25 programs year in and year out, that rivalry game has playoff implications, for sure Pac-12 implications. And so I think this Lincoln Riley hire will push UCLA, not that they shouldn't have been trying to achieve that anyway, but now it will force their hand to really say, okay, if we don't really want to be a laughingstock or the real little brother in LA, we need to really put together some good teams. So I'll end with this question to you, because I agree with all the potential guys going to the NFL and what's going to happen. And DTR, you know, still being very cryptic, not really cryptic, but not giving us any real info on his tweets, really saying if he's coming or staying. But I'm going to end with this with you. As an arrow, defensive coordinator, the hot topic among UCLA fans. We've seen two hires now by Chip Kelly, adding to the defensive staff, which unfortunately leads me to believe that they're retooling some coaches to give more firepower for Azanero, but not replace him. Because if you bring in a new defensive coordinator, you would think they would give him the keys to hire the rest of his staff out. Do you see it that way? Do you think Azanero is back next year? Or do you think there's still a chance they could move on and bring in a new DC?
Yeah, Ryan, unfortunately, the signs are in place that Azanero comes back. You don't hire line positions and the secondary unit type positions if you have uncertainty at the top of that side of the ball. And so, unfortunately, I think for better or for worse, Chip and Azanero are back in the field, and Jarman and Josh Revolts and the UCLA Athletics Brain Trust seems to be sort of comfortable with that. And I think the thinking is, look, this is the number one scoring Pac-12 offense. This is the number two yardage Pac-12 offense. You swap out DTR with a Gabriel or a Garbers. You know, you've had to swap out your leading rusher three consecutive years now between Joshua Kelly, Dimitri Felton, and now Charbonnet probably will go pro as well. And so you have kind of an engine there moving in the transfer portal. You've got some solid play at the receiver position with Kaz Allen, Cam Brown. You're going to be potent offensively, you know, is it if we can sort of tighten things up at individual spots within the defensive unit, you know, and they can just be mediocre. They could just be the fifth or sixth or seventh best defense in the Pac-12. You're talking about a team that's threatening double-digit victories next season. And I think that's kind of the thinking. And the last thing, Ryan, I'll sort of leave you with is if USC UCLA gets to Ohio State, Michigan level, or Alabama, Auburn level, it changes the sport of college football.
Oh, yeah.
Because when you look at Ohio State, Michigan, those are two universities that are in different states. Alabama, Auburn are in different cities. When you talk about USC, UCLA, it's the same city, 12 miles apart. Parents went to one school, children go to another school, brothers go to one school, sisters go to another school, husbands go to one school, wives go to a different school.
You went to both schools.
The house divided is so real. The electricity, if these two teams become top 10, I remember 88 with Rodney Pete, Troy Aikman, the city was on fire. 05 in the Bush-Leinert years, UCLA was 9-1 going into that game, ranked 7th. The city was on fire. If that happens year after year, it'll be unprecedented in modern college football, and LA becomes an epicenter of college football in many ways.
It's going to happen. I'm waiting for it, Jamal. I'm hopeful, fingers crossed, because you add that with the Rams and Chargers both being good in this town, and this is the football mecca of the country, which who would have said that 10 years ago that LA could be a football mecca? But we have the opportunity now. And
no doubt.
And the chances now. And to follow up just on what you said about Azanero, you know, I know the hope is to move on, but hey, if they're deciding they're going to keep him, which it looks like they are, I do think the two hires they brought on, which we didn't really talk about, but I think they were solid hires at least. And you hope that they can shore things up position wise. And The Azzanero defense is very strange because I think there were times this year where it looked good, right? There were times where the aggressiveness, we were like, wow, that really paid off. And there were times specifically against Utah and Arizona State where it just looked atrocious. And it was like, wow, this is what's really bringing this team down. So it's, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say I agree with the move, but it seems like that's what it's going to be.
Yeah, and I totally agree, Ryan. And I think as long as they can sort of aim to be a mediocre defense, this has the potential to be a double-digit team, a double-digit win, and a conference contender. So, you know, let's see what happens next year. And I think the transfer portal is going to be key, again, in that process leading into February, March, and April.
Yeah, and you never know. You get some dogs in that defense, too. Things could change. I mean, I don't want to discredit any of the players that play, but, I mean, you had Quantrez Knight, who ended up being a star in this defense, but he was a transfer from a JC school. Like, if they get the talent discrepancy a little differently, too, we could see some differences because the way the defense plays, the aggressiveness is sometimes you need talent to be able to make things up when the aggressiveness goes awry. And you're playing kind of off script, if you will. So,
and I think, you know, Ryan, the last point there I'll say is I think Chip's got to find the right transfer. Yeah. I love Trez Knight. I love some of the guys that we brought in. But oftentimes these guys, you know, Trez Knight came from Kent State. A lot of these guys have sort of chips on their shoulder that they were overlooked or they were in an environment where they were not noticed. And so they come in really aggressive but play high-risk football.
Yeah.
Because they sort of want to make – the huge play, the highlight, make the big splash. And I think sometimes what you need is just positionally and fundamentally sound play where, you know, you're not necessarily looking for the spectacular, but you're just trying to go kind of station to station in football here and sort of stay on script defensively.
Yeah, no, well said. Well said. That's absolutely true. And we'll see some of these guys that they've already got some transfers coming in and some of the in the recruiting. Which we'll, you know, the next few months we'll see more transfers. So Jamal, you're the man, good friend. I wish we would have hung out in San Diego had circumstances been different, but hey, we got a lot of time to do that all year here at the LA Football Network. So thank you for jumping on the show with me. Appreciate you. And, I'll talk to you before then, but for all those listening, Happy New Year.
You too, Ryan. Always great to see you and talk real soon.
Sounds good, man. Take care. All right. There goes Jamal, my man. Great guy. If you haven't read his work, I mean, one of the best writers I've literally ever read. I mean, he is a phenomenal, phenomenal writer. Covers UCLA here at the LA Football Network, but also involved in a lot of our business side of things and helping us kind of take this thing to the next level, which we're excited about. So, yeah, tough circumstances for UCLA, but that's the way it goes. Season over. Now we can look to 2022, as I think this is a very talented squad. That can really be a force to be reckoned with in the Pac-12. And I am so excited about LA football in this town with USC and UCLA, with Lincoln Riley coming to town, with Chip Stan in town. I mean, 10 years ago, Chip Kelly was the hottest name in college football. And now everyone wants to run out of town after you win 8 wins. And I know there's some bad losses there, or I shouldn't say bad losses, but you couldn't beat some really good teams. But I want to see him ride this thing out. I don't think you restart yet. You've improved every single year. You get to a bowl game finally, albeit didn't get to play it, but get to one finally. Let's let them ride this thing out. Let's see what happens next year as we battle for this city. And it's going to be a hell of a ride and a lot of fun. And I'm super glad the LA Football Network is here to bring it all to you because we've got big plans too for 2022. Speaking of big plans, let's wrap up the show with some Chargers talk. Oh, man, talk about a deflating loss. I need a drink after that one. Travel down to Houston against a 3-win team and lay an egg. You know, I know there were COVID issues, missing some key players, Joey Bosa out, Austin Eckler out, Mike Williams out. I mean, those are three superstars on this team. And not just on the football field, but as leaders in the locker room. Like when the going gets tough, sometimes you lean on those guys to lead. Even if it's not making a play, but you know, those that have played football know that your leadership plays an integral role to winning. Even if they're not showing up in the stat sheet or even on the field. I mean, we had a guy in high school that was just a emotional leader that rarely played. But he just, you know, he was able to lead guys and almost be a player's coach. And you're missing those guys because that's what they're not like injured on the sideline. They're gone. They're at home quarantining. So that's a big deal. However, this team is still too well coached and too talented to still lose to a Houston team that was also dealing with a lot of COVID issues and injuries. It wasn't like they were coming in 100%. Brandon Cooks, their best player, out. They're rolling with a rookie quarterback, Davis Mills. He's actually looking pretty damn good as he goes on. Previous show, I had a James from Texas Unfiltered on. Texans Unfiltered, Texans podcast. And he spoke highly of him. Said they're not, he doesn't think the team's putting all their chips on him as the future quarterback, but he's not saying they're not. Like, they have faith that he could actually be the real deal when they move on from Deshaun Watson. Man, I'm mixing everyone's names up tonight. But yeah, just a bad performance. Like, you know, the Chargers have been such an up-and-down team this year, and we've talked about it a lot on this show and on this network, Chargers Unleashed. They do a great job also. If you haven't checked them out, make sure to check out that podcast. You know, you have phenomenal wins, and then you just have bad losses, like against Baltimore, laid an egg, just absolutely blown out. You know, Dallas and Minnesota, both games, they just didn't finish. Played good overall, just didn't finish. And then this game, though, and this team is different. I tell you what, man, I've talked all the time. This team is different. It's well coached. But you go to Houston, you play in front of like 13 people. I mean, that stadium was empty. Have you seen an emptier stadium this year in the NFL? It looked like last year when there were stadiums that actually allowed fans, but they were at like 30% capacity. That's what it looked like. There were a lot of Chargers fans there. Hats off. Hats off to Chargers fans. But you go down there, and, you know, here's the thing. When you look back at the game, and I'm not going to talk too much on it play-by-play. We're going to get into the playoff picture here and what needs to happen. But the game, the Chargers, it's not like they came out just awful. I know people will say, well, they came out flat. They should have been, you know, scoring on every touchdown on every drive, and why are they stalling in the red zone? Like, I get that sentiment, but they came out, like, the offense moved the ball pretty well. The defense, you know, overall in that first half played pretty well. I mean, the offense went down, got a couple field goals. The turning point seemed when they're moving down the field before the first half, about 4 minutes left, and Herbert takes a shot, pushes a deep ball into double coverage at the goal line, ends up throwing an interception, underthrows it a little bit, ends up turning into an interception. That was the turning point, because had the Chargers, even if they just got a field goal, got points on the board, all the momentum going into half, they had the lead, but then they turned the ball over, Texans come out in the second half, march right down the field again, and then it's like the wheels just came off, and they couldn't ever get back to neutral. You know, the offense, I thought, moved the ball fairly good. You know, Justin Herbert, 336 yards passing. Justin Jackson, I thought, had a great game. In Austin Ekeler-Stead, 64 yards on the ground, 98 through the air. Had almost 20 touches total, 2 touchdowns. But even him, like, when he got going and got better, had a critical fumble. Critical turnover. It's like this team can play well, but they can never play well for 60 minutes. There's always some back-breaking mistake. Even in a lot of their wins, back-breaking mistakes. Now, why I've said this team is different and why this coaching staff deserves credit is that a lot of times, 8 times to be exact, they've overcome some of those back-breaking mistakes. And in years past, they wouldn't have. Now, this game on Sunday, it felt like they were always going to overcome it because of A, who the competition was, and B, because of what was on the line. I mean, keep winning and this team's in the playoffs. They control their destiny. Can't win the division no more. Kansas City kind of took off. But they were, you know, they were sitting there in the sixth seed. move to 9 wins after they beat the Texans like we all thought? I mean, no one predicted the Texans to win. Why would you? Move to 9 wins, 9-6 on the season. You know, you're still fighting for an 11-6 year, which is a huge improvement from last year and gets you in a really good, you're fighting for that 5 seed essentially. Because 1 through 4 is the division winners. But it's unfortunate that even the guys that were in, you know, Justin Herbert, Keenan Allen, Rashawn Slater was back, Asante Samuel Jr. on defense, couldn't get it done. And I think it shows you two things. Last two things I'm going to talk about this game, and then let's get into the playoff picture and we'll wrap up. Like, you know, top of the show, I was like, all right, this is going to be a short show with everything going on with my family, and here we are pushing an hour. It's a good escape. So thank you all for hanging out with me during a tough time and talking some ball. Any questions you have, any Chargers questions, drop them at me right now before we wrap up. But I think two things about this defense. Joey Bosa is a superstar, obviously. But the stars of this defense, or the players that mean the most, are Derwin James, shocker, and Justin Jones. I don't think people, and I think a lot of people on Twitter, a lot of podcasts, a lot of media guys are starting to put it out there more. But maybe the casual fan might not realize how important Justin Jones is to this defense and to this run defense. I saw a stat, I think it was Daniel Popper put it out from The Athletic. I don't have it in front of me, so I don't know the exact number, but it was something like when Jones plays, yards per carry is like 3.8. Games he's not is like almost 6. Like, it's a substantial difference when he is in or not in the game. And so you can blame coaching. You can blame Tom Telesco with depth. And, you know, those are valid. But I think, again, 3/4 into the first tenure of this coaching staff and working with Telesco as GM, you can get frustrated. You should get frustrated. But you shouldn't throw the towel in and call it a wash, a wasted season, fire everyone. Because you have to know this coaching staff. I know we're 16 weeks in, but they're feeling out these players and who can play behind who and what needs you have. And you can't figure that out before you've ever seen these guys play. I know Telesco's been here 8 years, but he doesn't know how Staley wants to coach, how Ronaldo Hill wants to substitute, how Joe Lombardi wants to coach. They're learning on this together on the fly. And once you pass that trade deadline, and I mean, you can't add significant players. And they have added some. I mean, Andre Roberts was a great addition to this squad for the special teams. So you got to give credit to that. So I think when you can be real critical of this staff, including Telesco, because again, this is a now new regime. You can't talk about Telesco and his 8 years, because once you get a new coaching staff, you kind of reset the GM. Because then you're roster constructing based upon this coaching staff. So you're resetting it. So you got to look at, this is year one of this staff in its entirety. I know that's weird to think about, but it's year one, 16 weeks in. And so this staff and Telesco will know, all right, our depth behind Justin Jones is pretty bad in the run game. Brandon Staley last year with the Rams had great depth that he didn't have to build. It was there, and he improved them in coaching. Now he comes over to the Chargers, and he's got to build that depth and coach. And I'm not saying he shouldn't be get no criticism, because he should. I mean, he's a defensive coach. I saw a lot of people out there saying, well, we bring in this defensive coach and our defense is worse. And yes, to some areas it is. Absolutely. The rush defense is worse this year than it was last year. But you don't expect Justin Jones to miss a significant amount of time. Joey Bosa to miss multiple games with COVID. Linebackers to miss multiple games. You have like 1,000 different secondary groupings going on. So there's so many moving parts, and I think that's why there's been these struggles on defense. And yeah, Jerry, like you just said, this is a huge offseason for the Chargers. Huge offseason, because this team is built to win now. And you had the right pieces in the offseason through free agency and the draft, and they go from built to compete, built to win, to built to contend for Super Bowls. That's how good the quarterback is. That's how good I believe the coaching staff is. And that's how good the key players at key positions are. Derwin James, Joey Bosa, Keenan Allen. You have a superstar player at every level. Kaiser White has proven to be a superstar at linebacker. Superstar at every level. You just got to add some better depth, some situational players, and not have guys miss games with COVID. That's what it's going to come down to. So what needs to happen, though, for this team to make the playoffs this year? Because, I mean, here's the reality, guys. If this team gets in and you're healthy, anything can go. I mean, the Giants snuck in twice at 9-7 as a wild card. Won the Super Bowl both those years. They were written off both those years. Snuck in. One of those years they beat an undefeated Patriots team, maybe the greatest team of all time. So all you got to do is get invited to the dance. Get invited to the dance and anything can happen. So in these last 2 weeks, what needs to happen for the Chargers? It's quite a lot, unfortunately. They first of all got to beat their final two opponents. Play the Broncos next week, which I should be at that game, barring funeral arrangements. And then they finish the season against the Raiders. Broncos are 7-8. Season's pretty much done. So they're playing basically evaluation football, playing spoiler. I think that coaching staff's going to be gone. So they don't have much to play for. Just play spoiler. They're going to be going to the free agency or the draft for a quarterback. I know Drew Locke's playing this weekend, but I think this team has moved on from him, or at least his coaching staff. We'll see if a new staff comes in. But either way, they're playing spoiler. Raiders, who knows what will happen by the time we see them. But they are still alive. Same record, 8-7. So that last game of the season, if both teams are 9-7, that's going to be a wild one. But anyway, beat your final two opponents. Ravens are 8-7. Lose at least one of their final games. They play our Rams this week. So Chargers fans out there, maybe this week be nice to Rams fans. Because if the Rams win, that substantially helps your cause. You want the Rams to beat the Ravens this weekend. Finish with the Steelers. Steelers also 7-7-1. I mean, they're below the Chargers technically because they have that tie. So that could be another one that beats them. Baltimore owns the tiebreaker over Los Angeles based on head-to-head win percentage. Obviously, we know the Ravens beat the Chargers earlier in the year. So we really just need the Rams to beat the Ravens. That would drop them to 8-8, and the Chargers went out. That alone should be... Oh, no. Also, sorry. Dolphins also need to lose one of their final two games. So we know they beat the Saints. So they're 8-7, tied with us. They're in that final wild card spot. They play the Titans and the Patriots. Titans and the Patriots. They own the tiebreaker. But, you know, they win one. They're at 8 losses. Chargers are at 7. So the biggest thing here, Chargers need to win out, and they need the Ravens and the Dolphins to each lose at least one. That happens. From my math here, they're in. Baltimore plays the Rams this weekend. Dolphins play the Titans and then the Patriots. So very likely that can happen. So you got to be big Rams fans and big Titans fans. And obviously, big Chargers fans. Got to win out. So there's your likelihood that we can hopefully still have two LA teams in the playoffs. With that being said, let's go ahead and wrap the show. Thank you all so much for tuning in with me, bearing with me. You know, obviously some more unfortunate news for the Dyrud family that broke. So I appreciate you letting me use this as an escape and talking football. We'll be back on Friday, same time, 5:00, previewing this Rams and Ravens games. We'll have some guests on the show previewing this Chargers and Broncos game. Have some guests on the show. And, yeah, big thanks to Jamal for jumping on with me, talking about UCLA and the Holiday Bowl as they prepare for their offseason now. And thank you all you for tuning in. Find me on Twitter at Ryan Dyward, LAFB, main account at LAFB Network. Make sure to like and subscribe the show wherever you listen to podcasts or on YouTube at LAFB Network. We certainly appreciate it if you subscribe there and check out the website, LAFBnetwork.com, all of your Los Angeles football content. I'm your host, Ryan Dyward. Appreciate you all. Have a great hump day, midweek. We'll talk to you all on Friday.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.